Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Tender to Gavin Newman, David Wetnall.
Hello. Here I am. I'm here.
I'm here with my co-host. So, episode 4. Last episode we recorded was the final day of the World Championships.
It was.
And obviously Mark Selby won. Didn't look very happy, did he?
No, he looked a bit not arsed about it.
There was no fist pumping.
Oh, none of that.
I like a bit of fist pumping.
Come on!
But yeah, and then Hazel told him that Leicester had won the Premiership.
And he deadpan.
Just flatlined.
Yeah. Playing it very straight, wasn't he?
But, and he said something about like the first time was better.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something up there or not?
I think problems at home.
Problems at home. There'll be a lot of fist pumping back at the hotel, separate rooms.
Oh dear. What you were implying?
Also, though, I noticed at the World Championships, you see Stuart Bingham got interviewed at the mid-session interview.
All right, yeah.
And he said, when I won last year, I bought the table, fair enough.
Yeah.
And then I came out of the hotel room the next day, saw the crucible carpet and a skip. Add that as well. He's laid out the carpet. And he said, oh, why are you back this year? And he went, well, I've just bought a new house, haven't I? So going to try and get the carpet again.
That's so funny. Do you think he's trying to recreate the crucible in his house?
Possibly.
He's going to steal one seat.
People worried that it's going to go to China. I think it's going to go to Stuart Bingham's house.
Yeah, it's a very real danger.
The winner will get a nice chicken dinner.
Yeah. One year they'll turn up to the crucible, it won't be there. It'll just be gone. It'll just be a gap.
Yeah, something about Stuart Bingham.
Yeah, Bingo's got it.
Also, I noticed at the quarterfinal stage, I know we're talking about the World Championships, it's still when we've done 4 podcasts,
yes.
But you know, it is the main event. He was interviewing some journalists backstage. This was quarterfinal stages, so there was still Ding and Fu in the championship.
Yes.
So it was about whether the proposition of being an all Chinese final. And this one journalist, I have no idea what he said, but John seemed to think it was fine. I'll have a little listen to this.
Yeah, and finally, just one question to you. If Marco Fu gets there as well versus Ding Junhui, the figures could go through the roof, people watching, couldn't they?
Well, Kenby will be over the moon as well.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much. That's the views from down here, but of course, he's still got a very tough match to win.
That's very weird.
That's so strange.
Kenby will be over the moon as well.
Yeah,
who's Kenby will be? Kenby will be!
Who's Kenby will be?
Kenby will be over the moon as well.
Kenby will be over the moon as well.
Kenby.
If anyone knows what he was on about, please tweet us or email us.
And if the guy who said it is listening, straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Kenby will be. You know, I had this lad that I know.
Yeah.
He wasn't really into football, but you know, kind of when you're at school, you have to pretend to be into football. Anyway, he went to watch a Tranmere match.
What's this got to do with snooker?
Well, it's not really. It's just about the not understanding what people are saying.
Okay.
So they went to a Tranmere match, like him and two other lads who were really into it. You know, he used to go all the time. So he went to this Tranmere match with them. And Tranmere do this chant. They go, Super White Army, Super White Army, Super White Army.
Yeah.
Right. But he didn't know that's what it was. And because it didn't sound like that, you know, when a lot of people are chanting it, everyone was chanting it. And then, you know, he did like one more than everyone else. So everyone else stopped and he carried on for one more. And they heard that he was shouting, Ole, Ole, instead of Super White Army.
Ole, 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 Ole.
Ole, Ole. Because he just didn't know what they were saying. So he was just making it up.
It can be difficult at football to sort of decipher what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You should give out.
I mean, it's easier if you're in the crowd because you know.
Should give out a hymn sheet.
Yeah.
And now hymn 5. You're shit and you know you are.
I like hymn number 7. The one when the goalie's taking the goal kick and they just go ooh.
So loads of O's on the page.
Shit.
Getting bigger.
That's the best one.
That is the best one.
Your shit.
So there was a lot of uproar on Twitter about the shootout becoming a ranking event.
Yes.
World Snooker made it a full ranking event.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously all the players were getting really upset because I think the ranking points you can get from that are similar to what you get for like the quarterfinals of World Championship.
Because the prize money's high for it.
Yeah. So obviously it's a bit of a gap. It's just a lottery, isn't
it? Well, yeah, one frame
with a shoot with a shot clock.
Yeah, yeah.
I can understand where they're coming from. And I think it's just a bit of a shame because it's quite funny, isn't it? It's like the novelty of it.
Yeah,
that'll stop.
Yeah, it is.
The players playing to the crowd. You got Poon Jang like bumbling about like Lee Evans on acid. It's just dead funny.
Yeah, but I can also see from the other side that that you know they want to make it a ranking event, But I mean, everyone, all the players go in it. Like, oh, yeah. You may as well.
Do you know why I think why they do things like this? Just to get Ronnie O'Sullivan to enter.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's purely the broadcasters want that.
Yeah.
World Snooker want it.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody it does make it. Sense because if you're a top 16 player, you with the shootout, you could just go, well, I'll give it a miss, I'll swerve it. Like,
it'll get top players entering, it'll get Ronnie O'Sullivan entering. Yeah. And I think it's actually quite entertaining as a sort of, it gets quite tense.
Yeah.
So I think it'll still be good.
It's good for the sport because if the top players are entering it, then more people will watch it. Mm. So, you know, it'll get more publicity.
But I don't think the winner deserves the points.
I don't know. I still think, how many rounds are there? You keep.
Yeah, but it's one frame, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
I know what you mean.
I mean, whoever wins it has got to win all the matches. So they've got to win all the frames. It's not just like they've got to win one. Like,
but I mean, for the amount of points you get for it. Anyway.
Yeah.
And I think Ronnie might enter it because he's, I mean, with his points coming off from 2 years ago from the World Championships, he's dropping down to about 10th now.
Yeah.
So he's got to start entering some things.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
I mean, the argument as well is it, although it, there is a chance that it's a toss for coin because, you know, you could break off and leave someone in and they could clear up. But you would expect over time that the better players would win it more often.
Yeah.
They should do. Surely he's not completely.
Well, the more instinctive players as well.
Yeah.
So more than the tactical.
The likes
players.
Of Ronnie, you would expect to do really well in it.
I suppose. Just trying to speed up snooker.
That's what Barry's trying to do. He just wants everything speeded up. Mm. Snooker on speed.
More snooker on telly. Do you know on YouTube you can speed up the videos?
Can you?
Yeah. But you can. That. There's like, you can do it like four different speeds.
All right, okay.
And I put it on for like some of the commentary. So if Barry Hearn wants to speed up snooker, this is what it'll be like for the pundits and the commentary. Ready?
Yeah.
Nobody could get a foothold in it, but fascinating to watch his top snooker.
It is, and John, you're seeing him far more demonstrative than we've ever seen before. He's getting a little bit of this. He's certainly fired up.
Yeah, that's exactly the expression I was going to use. That's what he is, and great determination. But what a clearance that was! I mean, the last red is an absolutely fantastic shot to get onto the black to make the clearance. And what nerve on the pink, because they are very, very smelly down the cushion. You catch them there, the joy, you lose the frame. But Selby got out Selby there, and the quality of the snookers at the end of it was absolutely wonderful. Great hunting.
It was. And Mark Selby, what are your observations about the first couple of frames here? Because obviously, I'm following social media, I'm looking at what people are saying, and they're saying that perhaps he looks like he might be running on fumes a bit here. Does he look to you like he might be a little punched out?
Every time anybody says that, he comes straight back into the next two frames. So I'm giving up predicting what sort of reserves he's got left because he seems to find it from everywhere. Like he did last night.
Okay, back we go. And Stephen and Dennis, what are your observations of what we've seen in the opening couple of frames so far?
Well, it's been incredible stuff from Ding Zhongrui. We said he was going to try and win this mini session 3-1, which will show you the black again, which gives him a second frame, so he's on course for that, and you can see that bit of determination there from the Chinese sensation.
Very, very smelly.
It sounds like they've all taken loads of coke.
I love that bit with John Pallett. They are very, very smelly.
Very, very smelly. I think Dennis Taylor sounds like a horse racing commentator. Just like the tone of his voice. Can we listen to that bit again?
If you want, yeah.
Just a bit of Dennis Taylor.
Okay, back we go. And Stephen and Dennis, what are your observations of what we've seen in the opening couple of frames so far?
Well, it's been incredible stuff from Ding Zhongrui. We said he was going to try and win this mini session 3-1, which will show you the black again, which gives him a second frame, so he's on course for that, and you can see that bit of determination there from the Chinese sensation.
Got the rhythm of like a horse racing commentate, like the gallop in his voice.
It'd be hard to keep that up though for snooker, wouldn't it?
Oh, God.
And they're off. There they go. And they're off.
Yeah.
But there we go.
Well, you know, it's a brave new world.
So we should talk about Q School.
Did you watch any of the Q School?
You can't watch any of it. It's not televised at all.
It's not
online or anywhere. I kept up with the scores on like World Snooker and like on Twitter and stuff. Actually, Jason Francis, the chairman of World Snooker, tweeted something really funny. It made me laugh. Just read that out.
All right. That's harsh. He says, all I can say is there must be a lot of people with 600 quid to throw away. Hashtag deluded.
Hashtag deluded. I think he's right, though.
That's harsh, that, though.
Well, it's a professional game. You know, people just come in and paint it just for the experience. You know, you need to be a top amateur.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just wasting their time.
But do you think people are just throwing away 600 quid for a laugh? Or do you think the people just are having a go and
maybe they're
not
just,
very good?
They're struggling, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they've not played in that kind of environment. Yeah. It's not easy.
But I mean, you would think that if you're an amateur, if you're a good amateur, you must have played loads of tournaments. You know, you must have played.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, anyone can enter it, so it's not.
Yeah, yeah. It's just open entrance.
If you and me could enter it.
Shall we?
When I first looked at all the entrants for Q School, I was quite surprised that there wasn't actually that many Chinese entering.
All right.
But after event one, the four finalists, three of them were Chinese, and a seven in total from like the other avenues of qualification.
Right.
And then event two, I think it was four previous professionals.
Mm.
So that's quite interesting. I think that is probably the way the tour will go in the future in terms of like older experienced players clinging on to the tour
and
like newer, sort of younger Chinese players. And I think it'd be harder for like younger European amateurs.
But is that just because the standard of the young Chinese players is so much higher?
Yeah, I think there's so many more people playing. I mean, it's inevitable that, you know, they'll be dominant at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, they're trying to... Sean Murphy and Snooker Baku, who does, runs his own tournament and the blog, they're trying to put together a proposal to World Snooker for, like, an amateur tour and a junior tour. And they want, like, tour cards for the winners and stuff, but they're not getting anywhere with World Snooker at the moment.
Because World Snooker don't want to go down that avenue.
Well, they're happy for them to do it. I just don't think they'll give out tour cards.
Right.
But they need that incentive, you know. It's going to be hard work, isn't it?
Yeah,
sure. But hopefully they'll get that on, off the ground. Like. It was quite sad to see Tony Dvega dropped off, tried to get back on Q School, and he didn't qualify. And he's kind of like one of the last players from that boom town of snooker in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's a bit sad. Like, apparently when Bowie was trying to take over World Snooker and trying to get everyone on board, he did this, like, big conference for the players. And Tony stood up and made this, like, impassioned speech. And he was dead emotional. The players were emotional. And, like, he was nearly crying.
Yeah.
Sat back down, missed his chair, fell on his ass.
He's such a, to ruin a moment.
He's such a character.
Yeah.
It's sad to see people like
that. But, I mean...
He'll never get back on it.
Yeah, it's a bit sad. It's a bit sad in the sense of, like, you know, that's his livelihood and, you know, he needs to retire now. But, I mean, he must be, like... 50, 60, like, he must be
50, young, I think.
Is he?
Yeah.
But, I mean...
Give it up, Tony.
Come on, Tony. You've been doing this way too long. There's no need for him to carry on. Sure, you can something else. Like,
find something else?
Yeah. I don't know, he must be able to... He's fairly well known, Tony Drago. He must be able to find...
Well, he's on the Legends Tour, and he make a bit of money doing that.
I mean, he's had a good run, but, I mean, he was never a top player.
When I think of Q School, I think of an actual school.
Yeah.
To you?
Yeah.
Like, where they learn to play snooker.
With Barry as the headmaster?
No, but, well, I think Jan Bahas would be the headmaster.
All right, yeah, okay. He's got that sort of...
Well, you guys don't know what.
He's got that scholarly...
It'd be too laissez-faire, actually.
Do you think he would wear, like, a cape, like a proper old-fashioned headmaster?
Yeah.
And a mortarboard.
He'd be fine about you having a bit of a smoke behind the bike shed.
Oh. Hey, guys! What's that you're smoking?
It's fine.
Shave a bit for me.
I think Barry would be at the canteen serving up the nuggets.
Yeah.
And the ginger mushrooms.
What are we having today, Mr. Hearn?
Nuggets. Again. Always nuggets.
Who else would be... Who would be teaching history?
Ooh.
Probably
Dominic Dale, yeah.
As a billiards historian.
Yeah.
And General Bore.
General Bore. All-round Bore. Yeah, he'd be going through the past.
I was expelled from Q School. Got caught with a snooker ball and a sock. It's just a badly packed gym bag.
Science.
Dunno.
It'd be something about kicks, wouldn't it? It'd all be about how they get
Murphy's
kicks.
Quite into kicks, isn't he?
Yeah. Into kicks. You're really into kicks. How does he get his kicks? Kicks. I think, you know, John Virgo would probably be the teacher of, like, poetry or English literature.
He's a wordsmith.
He is a wordsmith.
Could you do a poem in the style of John Virgo?
I wandered lonely as a cloud. I wandered lonely as a cue ball, but where am I going? Anyone else? Anyone else in the school? What else happens at school? I think that's about it, isn't it? We've done everyone.
Didn't you actually work in a school?
Yeah, I worked as a cleaner when I was in sixth form. So
in our old school?
Yeah, so I'd go to school during the day, and then at 3:30 I'd start clean for 2 hours.
Oh.
It's quite good money, actually. It's pretty funny as well, because loads of the cleaners, we were all like, it was all people from the same year as me, so it was a good laugh. Like,
yeah.
And we used to, so the boss, with the caretaker, was a lady called Dot. And she was all right, like, but she was a bit of a... an authoritarian.
Yeah.
And obviously, because, like, we were just mucking about a lot of the time. And we'd each get our own little bit to clean. Like, you know, our building, one block that we had to clean. And she was always catching us, like, going to each other. Because we used to go to each other's blocks and speak to them. And we had phones, but we didn't have, like, WhatsApp on that all, you know, back then. So we used to just go and see each other and sit off for a bit. And if she finds you, someone else's, you get in trouble. She goes, get back to your patches. You had your own patch. Get back to your patches. Well, this one day, like, this, the word went round from Alice, another girl who was
the goon.
Cleaner. Alice the goon, yeah. She was a cleaner. And part of her patch was the year 7, 8 and 9, so the lower school girls' toilets.
Yeah.
Anyway, word went round, there was something we had to go and see on Alice's patch. So we all went over there from our different patches. We all congregated. And when we got there, I got there and could see that everyone was like in the toilets looking in there. And I was like, what is going on here? So I went in and they're all crowded around one cubicle. It was about five or six people, all crowded around one cubicle, like leaning in, looking inside. So I just like stuck my head in as well. And in there was the biggest poo I've ever seen in my entire life. It was ginormous. It was like the length of my arm, my forearm from the elbow.
Oh,
and like, and it was about the width as well. And was just like, it was leaning against the side. It was like standing proud of the water.
Was this a normal-sized toilet?
It was a normal-sized toilet, but not a normal-sized toilet.
Okay.
It was enormous. And bear in mind, this is the lower school girls' toilets. Like, I don't know how...
Probably a teacher.
Oh, I don't know what happened. But anyway, so we're all standing there looking at this massive shit. Thinking, oh my God, look at that. Anyway, then Doc comes along. And she's like, you know, she's effervescent with rage because she's not caught one of us off our patch. She's caught like six or seven of us all in the same patch. So she starts like screaming and going, what's going on? Dear? Get back to your patches. And one of us went like, Dot, you've got to see this. You've got to have a look at this. So she went, what? She stuck her head in the toilet and went, fair enough. I get back to your patches. So we all got off the hook. It was a sight to behold.
It's a big attraction, that.
It was, bloody hell.
So, on my quest to accumulate more snooker memorabilia, I stumbled across this DVD on eBay. And it's like a feature film, like low-budget film about snooker called Perfect Break, okay?
Wow.
And it's starring John Virgo, Jimmy White and John Altman. And I think John Altman was... Is he Nasty Nick off EastEnders?
Let's have a look at his face.
Doc Cotton's son?
Yeah, so I think he is, yeah.
It's not, you know, it's low-budget, but it's...
It's got all the stars.
And it's got, you know, proper release. It's really odd. I mean, I looked inside and it's like copied DVDs. It's pretty...
So someone's just doing it themselves. Just copy DVDs.
Have a little look at the synopsis on the back. Just read that from the middle.
All right, let me just have a read of this. Okay. It's a bit weird. Right. Hang on. It says here in the middle, a few years later, so it's talking about this guy, Ray Carr, it says a few years later, he's performing trick shots, wearing a mask in small clubs and trying to move on. But I don't understand why the mask. What's the mask for? We'll have to watch it, won't we?
Well, what we'll do is we'll watch it, and then on the next podcast, we'll give you our review of it. But it's an odd one.
4 stars, would recommend to a friend.
But I also picked up Cliff Forburn's autobiography, so I need you to start working on a Cliff Forburn impression for some of the anecdotes.
You need me to start working. Come in, Bond. I have a mission for you. I need you to work on your Cliff Forburn impression.
It's important. You haven't got that much time on your hands, but you know.
I'll do.
So if there's some good anecdotes, we can you do one of your skits.
Do a little bit of a skit.
What are your skits, mate? So the new season has started now. There's some quite slight changes from last season. We've got the Home Nation series, which is the Welsh Open, English Open, and Scottish Open.
Right,
and that's going to
the Welsh Open was always there, but
yeah.
Is it English and Open Scottish? English and Scottish Opens, have they always...
Sorry, and Irish Open.
Have they always been in
the... No, these are new tournaments.
Okay, so they've taken the Welsh Open and added one for each.
And it's called the Home Nation Series. I think there's going to be like a prize if you win all four, like £1 million or something.
Wow.
But I mean, no one's going to do that, are they? I think that there's been a bit of sort of complaints in that there wasn't... The prestige of the top 16 has sort of been lost a bit because of these flat draws for every tournament.
Right.
So those will adopt a system of the 16 will be seeded and placed in the draw and the rest of them will just be drawn at random.
Okay, so for those home nation ones, the top 16 will be seeded.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And then the German Masters and the European Open will be 32 players seeded.
Okay.
So I think that kind of restores the prestige of the top 16, which is good.
Yeah.
Because I always like that sort of getting into the top 16. It kind of been lost a bit, that, hasn't
it?
So that's quite good.
Do you think if Ronnie dropped out of the top 16, he'd bother to qualify?
For the World Championship. I don't know. I mean, it means so much to him. It's the one tournament, obviously, for every snooker player. But
I mean, do you think he could be bothered playing those three best 19s?
Probably not. He just wants to get in there, play the games as fast as he can. Don't, you know, preserve his energy.
Yeah.
And he knows it's a long slog anyway.
Yeah.
So I think he'd be.
That said, though, I mean, he does tend to improve. Like when he comes in the first round,
I think he would.
He always looks a bit rocky, and then he tends to improve with every match. So maybe if he played three games in the qualifiers, you'd expect him to win.
Oh yeah,
it maybe just be really good practice for him, and he'd come into the first round looking amazing.
I think he would enter, and I think he'd probably make light work of it.
Probably, yeah.
Like Ding did.
Yeah,
but it'd be interesting to see if he does.
It would depend on who you draw, because there's good players outside the top 16 now.
I mean, you can't rely on just picking three tournaments or whatever, and he'd have to win them.
Yeah.
And I don't think he can do that now.
The standard's so much higher.
Actually, I was looking at the top 32. I mean, just look at the quality of some of the players down the list, like past 16. I mean, it's just getting so strong now.
Yeah, look at that. So from 17, you got Lang Wenbo, Steve Maguire, Michael White, Alan McManus, Milkins, David Gilbert, Ryan Day, Graham Dott, Matthew Selt, Mark Davis.
So nearly all, the top way there, down, nearly like, all of them have been in the top 16.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're proven winners. And even further down, there's great players. Like.
Yeah.
So
Peter Ebdon down at 31, Ali Carter at 32.
It's amazing. Yeah. The standards just upped incredibly over the 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting as well that in that top 32, there's only a few Asian players. Like, they're still, the top 32 is still dominated by European players. You'd expect that to change over the next few years.
I think two players I was really impressed with at the World Championships was Lang Wenbo and Barry Hawkins. I think
Lang Wenbo is starting to look good, isn't he?
I think even though he lost his first round match, he looked great. He looked well more confident.
Yeah.
And I think he could do well this season.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, their players are kind of a bit under the radar in terms of.
Did Barry Hawkins get to the semis? No, the quarters.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of like the bookies, they're the sort of players you know.
Don't draw any attention.
Not that much.
Mm.
But
worth a go, aren't they? Yeah. Get along on some.
Okay, so at the moment, the qualifiers are happening in Preston Guild Hall, and it's for the next three tournaments, which is the Indian Open, the World Open, and the Riga Masters.
Okay, so they're doing the qualifiers all at once for the three tournaments?
For the next three tournaments, which is quite unusual, because last season or all other seasons, you have the qualifier and then the tournament. So now, say if you don't qualify, as a player doesn't qualify in those three, didn't qualify for the World Championships, it's like 4 or 5 months and not playing.
Without competitions, things.
Yeah, so there's a lot of pressure on those qualifiers. But that'll be interesting to see what happens there. I'll keep an eye on that for next podcast. So I was looking around on YouTube for sort of videos and things we can use for the podcast.
Yeah.
And I stumbled across this Pickpockets game show from the 80s.
Right, with like a precursor to a Big Break,
yeah, and it's really naff. But it turns out the game was so complicated that like it just fell flat, and like there was two tables. You can watch it on YouTube, Pickpockets, if anyone wants to look it up. There's two tables, two players, and they swap tables, break off for each other to try and make it awkward. And then this convoluted way of like the contestants asking questions and balls getting picked off the table. It just does not work. But I think that time in the 80s when snooker was getting more popular, they were trying to compete with the likes of
Bullseye.
Bullseye was massively popular, wasn't it? I think it was
they're trying to cash in.
I love Bullseye.
Bullseye was amazing.
I still watch it on a challenge.
You do, you've got a lot of time on your hands, haven't you?
There was a dead funny one the other day. Jim Bowen like speaks to the contestants.
Yeah.
Comes out and he goes, like, John, introduce yourself, please. And he goes, hi, I'm John. I'm a window cleaner and I also keep reptiles. And he goes, oh, there you go, John here's into snakes and ladders.
That's really,
really funny. He's always got to make a really funny thing at the start. He's actually a really funny comedian.
Yeah. I don't like Jim Bowen.
Pickpockets never took off, but Big Break was well popular.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
But not with Jim Davidson, though.
No.
He's a bit of a
racist. Or John Virgo.
Keep John Virgo on it. Just get rid of the racist Jim Davidson.
Who would you have as the presenter?
Don't know.
No, snooker player.
Yeah. You could have a snooker player, but you want someone who can have a bit of a laugh with the contestants, don't you?
Top bounce.
Top banter. Someone crap like Michael McIntyre would be good at it.
Hello!
Hello, Sheffield! yeah.
Some shit like
Billy Connolly.
Wee party.
A party.
A wee party. A party do. Hooba.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Aye, a wee job here. A wee party.
Yeah, Billy Connolly and John Virgo. I think that'd be an interesting dynamic.
Your time starts when you first strike the cue ball.
Okay, it's competition time again. We have actually had an entry for last podcast competition.
Have we?
But they got it wrong.
My description was not up to scratch.
They said it was Mick Price. It was not Mick Price.
I could see where they're coming from, Mick Price. Because, yes. I mean, I described him as a Dennis Taylor stripper.
A cheap Dennis Taylor stripper gun.
And I think Mick Price got the same gigs. He's got that look.
Yes.
But it wasn't him.
It's just the glasses.
Just the glasses, if he takes them off.
But the answer was Gareth Allen.
Gareth Allen. No winners, no one gets
So that t-shirt's still up for grabs. Yeah. So are you going to do me another description?
Subscription to your t-shirt?
You're going
to
do me another description?
Someone needs to win because that t-shirt is getting shop rotten.
The moths have got
hanging up in your wardrobe.
Okay, so are you going to describe a player for us?
Yeah, I've got a player here.
Okay.
And I would say this player looks like, right, you know Flock Seagulls?
The band Flock Seagulls.
If they went to play a game of snooker down at their local club.
Yes.
This guy wouldn't look out of place with the band.
Oh, hanging with the band. He's got that look.
He's got that, you know the Flock of Seagulls look.
The weird hair.
Okay.
So
and he also looks a bit like evil.
Okay.
Like an evil member of Flock of Seagulls.
Okay. Well, if anyone thinks they know who that is, you can either email us at snookerpodcast@gmail.com or just tweet us, Emperor of Pot.
Yeah.
Snooker Podcast. We'll accept entries from all mediums.
Someone's got to win that t-shirt.
Hey. But yeah, if you do want to enter as well, include your address so we know where to send it and size. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please tweet us at Emperor of Pot or email us at snookerpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.